The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, are you able to relax when you're watching a scary movie or maybe a true crime series? Or can you only unwind when you know there will be a happy ending? Dr. Brendan Rooney is an assistant professor at University College Dublin in the School of Psychology and the director of the Media and Entertainment Psychology Lab. And he joins me now. Good morning, Brendan.
Hey, Pat. Now, nice to be here.
Why do we watch fictional TV? I mean, I watch news all the time, of course, just to keep up to speed. But and I'll watch MasterChef and I'll watch sport, yeah, where the outcome is unpredictable. But why do we watch fiction television?
It's a good question. When we look at it in the lab, I think the main way to think about that is to talk a little bit about the neuroscience first. So the brain has two parallel systems when it's doing this stuff, and there's one part of us that knows that's not real, but at the same time, there's a whole load of parts of the brain that don't really care. And so they don't, like I said, don't care if it's real. If the face recognition system in the brain sees Scarlett Johansson on the screen, then it's done its job. It's seen a face. But we have this whole emotional system that's not interested in whether it's real or not. It's automatically responding to the explosions or to the romance. And so we can, and that emotion system is kind of faster. So it's responding kind of automatically to these things we're seeing.
So the idea of suspending our disbelief in something because we know it's fictional, we actually manage that quite automatically.
Yeah, because the knowledge that it's not real is a little bit slower. So we don't actively suspend our disbelief. The emotional system is getting stuck in there right away.
Okay, but we've done that since we were kids and we were told a story.
Yeah, that's true. We love stories. That's the thing. They offer us this way to kind of model the world, right? So that this system I'm talking about, this dual system, it offers us this kind of opportunity to simulate events. Did you ever leave a conversation and say to yourself, God, I wish I said this thing or that thing? That's you kind of running a simulation in your mind. So this dual system of fiction allows us to do that with all aspects of life. And that's why stories are amazing. Stories, whether it's gossip at the water cooler or radio stories, but films and TV, they directly show us those simulations for us to kind of work off.
Now, some people will look at the same thing again and again. They'll have a favourite movie and they'll watch it again and again. But then when you're a child, tell me that story again, Daddy.
Yeah.
Tell me the one about the elephant. Tell me the one about the...
Right. So, and like I'm saying, if we're engaging with these stories as a kind of a form of kind of simulation, it's almost like going to the gym. No one would question the guy who lifts the same weights over and over again. Our brain is automatically running these simulations and models. So to hear the same story again, not have to worry about kind of predicting what will happen next, that's all kind of really useful activities for the brain.
So does it matter what you're watching? I mean, if you're watching a very violent movie, you know, there are some people who cannot watch what one of my producers calls a rapey movie. Just cannot watch it.
Yeah.
And then there are other people who'll enjoy it. And I don't mean the rape scenes, but they'll enjoy the narrative and sleep soundly in their beds after watching it.
Yeah, there's definitely some research that shows relationships between something like our sensation seeking or our empathy. But a lot of the time, our choices are more about our emotional needs in the moment, what our brain needs to be drawn to, or how we want to, what we call, regulate our emotions. So if we want to, we've had a stressful day in work, we can distract ourselves away from that by watching something scary. But at the same time, I'm saying in parallel, our brain is kind of practicing what it's like to calm ourselves down in stressful situations. So in the moment, we're kind of doing this sort of making ourselves feel a particular way. And then in parallel, our brain is doing its exercise. So then as for the choice of what we watch, it's about what we feel we need in the moment. And then in parallel, what our brain is kind of automatically drawn to, what interests us.
Now, is what people watch a reflection of their personality?
I think it's
like, do sunny people watch sunny things all the time?
Yeah, no, I would say over moment to moment, day to day, course of our life, seasons of the year, our preferences can change. But I think the extent to which we do the same things every day, we talk to the same people, we probably cultivate the same sorts of preferences because our brain is kind of practicing those sorts of things it needs to do. But the extent to which we need different things or change our life or have more energy, or maybe we're on a particular day, we're feeling very open. And so we're up for trying a new sort of show.
You know, the very dramatic action pictures you have nowadays in the cinemas, and it could be the Marvel franchise, it could be any of these franchises, and they're very, they're full of, you know, bangs, explosions, action, high-speed thrills and so on.
Yeah.
They're aimed at the young market, and you wonder, are they aimed at the young market because that's where the availability of cash is, or whether as people get older, they don't want that anymore. They've enough reality in their lives and they prefer something a little gentler.
There's a little bit of that. But two other things I'd say is more and more you have that, those Marvel movies, for example, are speaking to people who read those comics when they were younger and are getting older. So the older audiences are seeing something different in those films. They're seeing a connection with their identity, nostalgia, who they are and their values. Younger people might like the explosions. But for me, I really like some of the awe in those, the wonder and amazing kind of visuals. We've research in my lab at the moment that's showing that awe stimuli can be really good for us for creating what we call a relaxed state of alertness. So you still have the energy and the engagement with the world, but it's in a calm way. And so
it can, even if you're watching really awful stuff happening on screen, because you know it's not real, you can achieve this other state.
Yeah, it's possible. But like I said, the emotions are already responding. And as we might see, okay, in fairness, we're not going to maybe feel the most positive awe towards a horrible scene, but people can also develop a sort of a tolerance towards things. So if the idea was to, like the way if you eat spicy food, it needs to get spicier to get the same kick, someone who loves horror movies might kind of find them a bit more predictable and need something more scary to calm themselves down.
But is this the same function as people who watch pornography? They need more and more extreme pornography.
Yeah, pornography, and it's the same as other sorts of maybe strongly emotional kind of materials, like I don't know, substances or gambling, that we're using these to regulate our emotions, and that unless we're kind of doing them in a, what we would say is an agentic way, we need to be choosing these things mindfully and in moderation.
Now, we always hear about fake news, but with generative AI, the kind of images that can be produced, which are absolutely fake, but look far more real than we could imagine. How are we coping with that these days?
Yeah, it's difficult because
we're more immersed with the sound and vision, 3D vision.
Yeah.
Even if you wear the goggles, like you're in that world.
Yeah, we have some research from my lab that's ongoing where we've looked at how people respond towards the increased 3D, the increased HD and surround sound. And what we're finding is that people in those sorts of conditions compared to the lower tech conditions are having stronger emotional responses. So their heart rate and their skin conductance are significantly higher than the other groups. But the surprising thing about our research was that when we asked people to report how they feel, they had no conscious knowledge that they were having this and a stronger emotional effect. And so it's an open question as to whether or not these sorts of realistic and immersive technology are more, I don't know, mentally taxing or emotionally draining.
This, like the lie detector, you know, they don't know that they're giving it all away by these automatic bodily responses.
Yeah.
They think they've lied very well. Thank you very much.
Well, I guess their bodily responses are only one part of the story. Actually, the way they construct the experience is the main part. But my point was that it's these immersive experiences are doing something to our body that might be kind of drawing our attention or wearing us out. And so they kind of need to be moderated.
The final question really is about time was there was no cinema, there was no radio, there's no television. People kind of read for relaxation.
Yeah.
That's what they did. We've no way of ever knowing how we compare the modern human to the people of Victorian times who had none of those stimuli.
Yeah. I guess the brain developed outside of that. It developed with stories. And so the mode of those stories isn't as important. But there are some features. We've some research in our lab that showed that scenes with close-ups in it tend to prompt more thinking of the scenes in terms of the characters' mental states, whereas the people who didn't see the close-ups talk about it in terms of events. If you're reading stories, you're probably more interested or more paying attention to the thoughts, whereas the films are showing you the visuals. So all of that are ways that the same stories are coming to us, and we're just still using those for the same kind of emotional regulation.
Can you ask your guest if he knows what it means when someone cannot ever remember the end of a movie or a book? Also, people who never watch a movie more than once, even though they can't recall the details. That's from Lisa in Dublin 7.
Yeah, it's possible that the story wasn't the main thing you were paying attention to, right? And so that maybe it's the social interactions, or maybe you're paying attention to how you feel when you're watching.
People are often on multiple screens, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's another point, that they're engaged in different activities.
A lot of research shows increased empathy in children who read fiction and, of course, other gifts that reading bestows. Himself is worried because I love to watch true crimes about how the husband was murdered. That's from Kathy.
Yeah, I think
I don't think it's my Kathy. She's spelled with a K. This is a C.
Yeah, that's important. The simulations I was talking about aren't always literal. So just because you're watching true crime doesn't mean that you're interested in the crime. It might be that you like figuring out people's intentions or motives, or that you like the idea that there's a system looking after us. So what we get from the films is always a little bit different.
Well, it'll be interesting in terms of reading, because in a few moments' time I'll be talking to Linda LaPlante about her latest thriller, which does involve a gruesome murder at its heart.
Well, that's one thing to say, is that storytellers know exactly how to move our emotions and capture our attention. They're really skilled in this area.
Dr. Brendan Rooney, who's assistant professor at the UCD School of Psychology and director of the Media and Entertainment Psychology Lab. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.